Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Everybody says say something, so I bloody well will, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus Speller and Luke Moore's here.
All right.
Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
And the man who's always looking for something he can't have, it's Pete Donaldson.
I will have it.
Hello, everybody. Good to have you here. Lovely. Lovely.
Nice to be here, Marcus.
Indeed. Although, sad news, Ken Dodd.
Yes, very sad. Yeah. 90, it's no age.
I'm a Diddy man.
Yeah.
You were a big fan of Ken Dodd back
in
the day, people.
What an entertainer.
My mum and dad used to go and see him quite a lot. But we never used to talk about their love of them, of him. I don't know why.
One of my favourite stories about Ken Dodd was when he performed at the... that famous venue in Glasgow, the Working Man's place.
Yeah.
I can't remember the... Was it Glasgow
Possibly,
Empire?
It might be Belfast.
No, as an Englishman,
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, it wasn't. I don't think it was called that. No, I think it might be called the Empire, and it might be in Belfast. This was definitely Glasgow.
Right.
But anyway, wherever it was, and he said that he came out, and they said English comedians always had like a really rough time there, and it was always difficult to win the crowd over. And his opening line, he came out there and went, "Well, I suppose you're wondering why I sent for you." And it went downhill from there.
A mate went to see Ken Dodd do his usual three-hour set, and halfway through, an older lady sort of sat in front of the stage, turned to the crowd, and started masturbating.
Really?
Yeah.
Turned to the crowd.
That is an upstaging of sorts, isn't it?
Not with the feather duster.
Ken Dodd...
did he mend herself?
For those who don't know Ken Dodd, that was a very good joke. Yeah.
He always made a point of being very, very clean, didn't he? So maybe she was just a sort of like anti-fan. Yeah. All right.
I just blew this up a bit.
Yeah. How do you respond to
derail
that?
This for you?
Antifa. Ken Dodd's Antifa.
Another little known fact about do people call him Doddy? About Doddy?
Maybe.
Was that, I think I'm right in saying, he had the third biggest selling single of the 60s.
My goodness.
With a song called Tears. Yeah. I read that this morning.
Apparently there was some competition back in those days.
Yeah, some good bands around then, so there we go.
There we are. So, yeah.
So, R.I.P. Doddy.
Indeed, yeah. But let's move on to the Premier League straight away. And we have to start with West Ham, really. I mean, my goodness, we spoke about them on the preview show last week as there was things being written about what was going on in the club. And I think that they advertised to the whole world that there was things going on at the club, didn't they, in that game? I mean, a number of pitch invaders and so on are huge problems throughout that club. I'd say on and off the field, but most of it was on the field.
A lot of stories this weekend.
Yeah, very much so. A lot of narrative. It's unlike us to start the top of the bill unless something mad happens like it has here with a game that wasn't televised.
Yeah.
3 o'clock on a Saturday.
I know.
Still saw plenty of footage. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. When the news came through about everything that was going on, I found a stream of it, and it was like I was watching the sides of the screen. I was watching the game, but not concentrating on it at all. It was all about what was happening off the pitch.
I was wondering whether they were going to show a lot of it on Match of the Day, because you see, normally they just move the camera away, don't they?
That's right.
But there was quite a lot of it shown. And
you had to show it.
Yeah, I think so. And very, very interesting situation, because if you take the football side of it, at that point, West Ham were 1-0 down with about 25 minutes left when it all started.
I think, was it not the second goal where it really kicked
off? Okay, so
they're still in the game.
They're 20 minutes to go and they're 2-0 down. Yeah. The game's not over.
Yeah.
But I thought the very first bit of crowd trouble happened on the first goal. And
if
it did, then you'd have to say that the fans have contributed arguably directly to a home defeat in that game.
Oh, absolutely.
And in a game where they needed really badly.
There was two fans on the pitch and they were kind of shepherded off by James Collins. And then when they got back into the stands, you know, one lad was kind of lapping it up. He certainly did. One got away and the other lad took a bit of a beating, which shows...
All I heard was that one like, "What's that going to fucking achieve then?"
Well, yeah. But that's it, isn't it? I mean, obviously, you know, those fans that got onto the pitch don't reflect the majority of
West Ham fans. It was just very underwhelming pitch invasion, really. It was just like, look what I'm doing. It's just, I think
the scarier thing was the, you know, the coins being thrown at David Gold and David Sullivan and stuff like that. And there was real vitriol in those faces from the footage we saw of that.
Yep.
But it's just a mess, isn't it? As we spoke about on the show before, I mean, I think a lot of fans, they feel like they were lied to in terms of the move to the stadium, because they were promised sort of, you know, this golden new era and how, you know, it would be brilliant and it would solve all their problems and push them forward. And that just hasn't been the case, because the club have been just run in a very sort of haphazard way. But the stewarding thing has become a big issue, and it's not actually West Ham themselves that run it. So there are so many things that need to be sorted out.
That has been a complaint since they moved in the stadium. The stewarding is dreadful at that ground, and we've seen a situation where the stewards can't control what's actually happening there. And do West Ham get the fine? Do the council get the fine? I'm confused as to who's going to get the fine. Because at the end of the day, you can't control stewards who don't belong to you, effectively.
Yeah. I can't imagine the council would get fined, though. Do you know what I mean? I just don't see it playing out that way. I mean, the stewarding is so bad, the club captain is having to deck pitch invaders.
But just, I guess, a slight alternative viewpoint in a few parts. One is that the idea of stewarding at a public event needs to be predicated on the idea that the majority of people aren't going to cause problems. You know, there's not a police officer for every person in London.
Of course,
there's an amount of police officers that can carry off the job with the understanding that most people aren't going to commit a crime. And it's the same principle in a football stadium.
It's how society runs, essentially.
Secondly, I mean, it's interesting that we talk about these fans not being reflective of the wider fan base at West Ham. It's like you just mentioned there, Jim.
I mean, very specifically the pitch invaders. I know a lot of them are furious.
Well, I mean, there's two ways of looking at it, isn't there? One is that it's a stupid thing to do, and it's a disgrace, and it shouldn't happen, and it's a bad example. And I understand all that, and I'm not defending the actions, but I'm going to try and go some way towards defending the anger felt, because I think another way of looking at it is that these people who love, and I understand that some of them may just be pissed up idiots. I get that, but not all of them can.
I think the man with the corner flag really had a thing to say.
He wanted to do a Graham Souness. Can I just finish the point really quickly? I really just want to finish the point. This is for some of these fans, at least, who've taken the action they've taken at the weekend, West Ham is clearly a very important part of their lives. They support the club, and you'd imagine they support for life, and they have paid a decent amount of money for season tickets and all that. I'm very uncomfortable when people say, this is not you specifically, Jim, but just generally when people say, oh, they're not real fans, or this is not reflective. Well, you could look at it another way. You could say, well, this guy or these selection of men here who support the club very, very, very deeply have decided to take matters into their own hands to such an extent that they absolutely know that they could be banned for life from a club that they've supported their entire life and will continue to support. It's high stakes, isn't it? If you assume that at least some of them have thought about what they're doing, I'm not saying that's definitely the case, but it might be, that goes some way towards the showing the depth of anger felt by what is essentially a terribly run club, probably the worst run club in the top flight, one of the worst run clubs in the country, and that has to be taken seriously. Just to sum up, I'm not defending the action, but you can defend the anger.
I think you're leaving yourself open there to be accused of sort of going, well, you know, I'm fine with the action with the things that you just said. I don't have a problem with people turning round to the chairman and all kind of, you know, giving them pelters when they're pelting them with pound coins. That's a different situation. So I don't have a problem with, you know, mass protests at the club. I don't have a problem with march and stuff like that. But I mean, when it does tip over, is, you know, physically assaulting someone. Yeah. It's a completely different thing.
The background to that is there was going to be a march, wasn't there? We talked about it on Thursday.
But the ultras, the right-wing ultras said, no, don't do it. Not in our name.
For me, the problems are throughout the whole club, and that includes the fan base, because the fans aren't even that united on this. Some fans want to do one thing, other fans want to do the other. It is such a great big mess, and I have no idea how you go about sorting that.
The corner flag thing, just to sort of come back in on that, apparently in the 90s, West Ham tried to introduce the bond scheme for season ticket holders, where you'd have to buy a bond to then be eligible to buy a season ticket to help to sort of basically redevelop the ground. And a fan did exactly what the guy did with the corner flag then. And it was apparently a reference to that.
Didn't know that.
But some of the chanting was Stratford's a shithole, we want to go home. But like, where do you do a ground share with Orient? Like, where can you go now? Like,
you can't. I mean, it's done now, isn't it? You would have thought, but yeah.
The soul's been ripped out of the club because they've not done something we talked about a couple of weeks ago with new stadiums. They've not done the basic stuff properly. I mean, they were sent. I heard a season ticket who spoke very passionately on a radio show I was on a week or two ago, or perhaps a bit longer ago, saying that they were given literature from the owners of the club with some guarantees. And one of the guarantees was that you'll be no further away from the pitch than you are now at Upton Park.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Which is an absolute joke.
It's just a lie. For me,
it's a blatant lie.
For me, they've tried to fast-track themselves, and they haven't done their... It's in move themselves up the pecking order. They haven't done what Spurs have done, put in a lot of groundwork.
Also, Marcus, because they got such a good deal out of the financial...
They did, and Spurs were after the ground as well. Yeah. But I think they've tried to fast-track themselves. Right, let's get to that stadium. Doesn't matter, and then everything will be hunky-dory. But no, other clubs, Spurs, Arsenal, the obvious ones, in the similar area, they've built their own stadiums, they've done it all themselves, and okay, Arsenal on the pitch, we'll come to them in a bit, but you know, you can't argue with the structure of that club and so on and so forth. And West Ham I think they were trying to do it too quickly, and it was perhaps built on sand.
One of the tipping points at the weekend also was the fact that they led tributes to Bobby Moore.
Yeah, exactly.
And then a minute later on the screens, their Hawk and Bobby Moore tribute shirts and stuff like that. They're gorgeous.
It's a terribly run club. No one's joined up, are they, really? No right-thinking human being is going to defend a coin being thrown at a pensioner in the name of a protest. We all understand that. But it's a terribly run club. Some of the stuff they come out with is absolutely outrageous. Mm. And no one can really defend their management of the club and the way they run things. To answer, I know we probably want to just sort of tie this up, but the only thing that's really going to help is if, in the fans' view, as far as I can make out, is if the ownership moves on, there's a new owner in there. But I don't know how that solves the stadium thing. I don't know what the arrangement is about, whether they want to stay or are they tied in to stay there a long time or not. I'm not quite sure because I haven't looked into it in much detail. What I do know is they're probably likely to get a huge fine for this invasion, pitch invasion. And they could also, I think the FA or the Premier League have power to make them play a game behind closed doors as well. So it's not going to help their relegation battle.
And also the most annoying thing is that the fans that the club are willing to meet seem to be the most right-wing, the most objectionable sector of their fandom, effectively. It just seems like a really strange way of going about anything. Really.
Well, it's all in chaos, isn't it?
And
absolutely.
Absolutely. There was a match played, lest we forget. West Ham lost, obviously. They've lost three in a row and are 3 points above Palace, who are in 18th. I mean, they did actually play quite well in the first half, oddly. Mm.
Dyche said in his post-match comments, we weren't very good in the first half. And it was easily forgotten. West Ham were the better side, probably.
And should have been a goal ahead. But Nick Pope made a crucial save against Lanzini. And then Burnley, obviously, I say took advantage of the situation, I mean in a footballing sense. I mean, they knew there was goals in there.
Well, they did. I mean, I think they took advantage of the situation as well. Burnley scoring three away from home is not something you really
Burnley scoring more than one goal is not a regular occurrence, you know.
And credit to Burnley putting the kids on the bench as well.
Of course.
Obviously, the crowd trouble was such a situation where they helped the kids into the stand.
That's right.
The stand and into the dugout.
Mark Noble's comments after the game, which kind of both about the game and the situation, were really interesting. He said, it's been bubbling over for a long time, and the only way that is ever really gone quiet is if we won games. And West Ham is a side that is not going to win every game. I can tell you that. We're going to lose games. But when we lose games, it's pretty much the end of the world. If we go a goal down at home, it has been tough. It has been really tough straight away because the supporters are not happy in the first place coming here. I think it's a chance to show their emotions towards not so much the players, but the board. And that is textbook of what happened and has been happening all season.
Yeah, but let's concentrate on Burnley, though, because they did well. And, with Nick Pope making the saves, another clean sheet for him. Ashley Barnes scoring a beauty. Chris Woods making a big impact as well. They look decent, and it was good for them to get another win. They haven't been winning too many games of late before the Everton one. But Nick Pope, is he a crafty shout for that third England choice goalkeeper?
I think on this show we've been a bit behind the curve with Nick Pope. We've not talked about him much.
I have to say that's my fault because I've been thinking, oh, he's just been warming the top heat and seat. You know?
Your heart's not going to heal. It's savage wounds overnight, Marcus. Yeah, that's the problem.
But I'm coming round to it. But
we briefly discussed this yesterday, Marcus, and you were talking about Pope and in the context of whether we're going to mention him on the show. And you said here, could he be a third choice shout? I mean,
second choice.
In terms of form, I mean, I understand we're getting a bit late in the day for this, and we've got a couple. We'll see a squad announced for England on Thursday, and we'll talk about that later in the week. I understand we're getting a bit late in the day, but you'd have to say, really, he's probably the form English goalkeeper in the league.
Might I have a few stats thrown in there to back that up? You know, obviously, this is from Opta. He has the best save percentage of all the English goalkeepers in the league. By a reasonable margin, actually, and hasn't made a single error that's led to a shot or goal, according to Opta.
That's incredible, isn't it?
The other candidates, Joe Hart's a non-entity. Joe Hart has been selected a lot for under Southgate, we know that, but his star is on the wane.
He's done. Right. Southgate surely can't pick him as number one.
Pickford and Butland are the other two sort of candidates, I suppose.
I think most people are suggesting Butland. But
they're not without their problems.
But that's right.
It's early for Pickford. We saw in some of the goals he conceded.
The position is very much up for grabs, yeah.
I just always think with England, if you're relying on your goalkeeper for getting you out of...
you need to pick a good goalkeeper.
I know, but it's just kind of like, it's just a bit different. It's all right. Well, you know, the last gasp, like the person right at the back is going to save us. It's like, well,
why even go?
Just go on.
Can I interest you in Carl Darlow? Who is second in that list behind
Nick Pope? So what's your alternative then, Pete?
I'm just saying that we always have
an appetite for
scapegoating goalkeepers when our back line is just laughable half the time.
No, we're either playing with
like 40-year-old bloody defenders who've been there for bloody ages who can't run, or we deal with... I'm, I'm on your side, Luke.
Pete,
just saying.
Who would you fancy for England goalkeeper?
I don't even care.
All right, there we go. That's the issue.
It's like the captain issue. It doesn't bloody matter.
Leave it to the ones who do care.
Yeah.
By which I mean Marcus.
Do you care about Manchester United? Eh?
Do they care about me is the question.
Well, probably not, Peter. No. But they care about being in second because they're holding on to that spot, aren't they? And now, chaps, obviously got a good win against Liverpool and it was better from Manchester United, especially keeping that Liverpool front line very quiet. Now, we've criticised Manchester United and Mourinho this season and many others have as well. And Liverpool have been heavily praised by us and others. And that's, you know, fine. But Man United are 5 points above them in the league. Have we been a bit too critical of Mourinho or is this... You know, it is just one result, perhaps.
I think they're very good, particularly in the first half. And I think that as I forget which pundit it was who said it, but the selection fell into it Mourinho's lap a little bit. And that's not to be obtuse and not give him the credit he deserves, but it did a little bit because
they've got injuries.
Because one of the biggest problems for him would have been, I suppose, balancing this team in a formation that he clearly wants to play, but keeping Pogba and Sanchez in there as well. And we've talked at length about how we think, well, everyone has really, about how Pogba's better on the left of a 3 and a 4-3-3, but I don't think Mourinho wants to play like that, and I don't think it suits Sanchez to play like that either. So when he's able to move to this 4-2-3-1, with Matic and McTominay at the base of the midfield, who look decent, look nicely balanced,
and it's a much more Mourinho type setup.
Yeah, and then you can use the pace of Rashford and Lukaku, who was, by the way, absolutely fantastic in this game. He was so good. I think they deserve a huge amount of credit for that win because to keep Liverpool from scoring, I know there was an own goal involved, but
they did a proper job on Salah.
Absolutely, there was nothing really to criticise United for, and that was a real a win to hang your hat on for Mourinho. I thought,
absolutely, because you know United were very very good in the first half, and they just did what Mourinho teams do when they need to. They're just like, no, you're not getting through in the second half.
And it was a free goal.
Were you surprised, Marcus, by Lovren being picked ahead of Matip?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, Klopp likes to rotate his squad, even at centre back. Yeah. Which is funny, isn't it? Because the centre back is the one position where managers tend not to rotate so much.
Well, goalkeepers always say that's really important. Defence in front of you that you know.
Yeah, a back five, if you're going to go that way, including the keeper. I was always brought up to say to be told that was a team within a team. And if you know who you're going to be playing with all the time, the relationship between the two centre backs and the goalkeeper is really important. And I think although Karius didn't really shower himself in a huge amount of glory against United, not really sure what he could have done for either of the goals. And he's an improving goalkeeper. He's the number one at Liverpool now. He's going to improve. I think he's got a lot about him, actually. I think he's a bit underrated and he will improve. And a special mention has to be reserved for Ashley Young as well, who was absolutely fantastic. Rolling back the years and ahead of an England squad being announced. You know what? It's a little bit... hard to find the words to say what I mean, but...
Emotional.
I'm sort of ambivalent about it because on one hand, I think that's a great performance and I've criticised those two fullbacks this season, saying they've been a bit overrated and that Man United shouldn't find themselves in a position where they've got a couple of 32-year-old fullbacks and no real other specialist options. But on the other hand, you think... That's a good performance. If he plays at that level in a big game against one of the better teams in the Premier League, why shouldn't we be considering him for an England squad? Well, just because he's Ashley Young and he's not really done much for England in the past. To me, you have to judge things on merit across the board.
Yeah, he looks reinvigorated in that role. And actually, you know, with Young in this form and Kyle Walker on the other side and Trippier as, you know, backup, we talk about England's defence being a little bit underwhelming, but it's very much just the centre-backs. I'm fairly happy with that.
I think from a well-covered at the back, maybe.
England looked strong on the flank, full-back or wing-back, and I thought we looked strong up front, and that is now in question.
Yeah.
that is a worry for all of us, although Jamie
a
Vardy...
A scan for all of England.
But Jamie Vardy, though, when he scores goals like that.
That was
what
beautiful.
Are we worried about?
What a goal that was.
Yeah, indeed.
Frank Lampard said it was his favourite goal of the season.
Why not?
Oh. Yeah, with his wrong foot as well, Vardy.
Lovely.
Mm.
But Rashford as well, in fine form as well. I mean, the way he took the first goal... I know people have criticised Alexander-Arnold, and understandably so, push him more down the wing. But when he turns that quickly...
Yeah.
I think more praise for the forward rather than more criticism for the defender.
But quite, and I think to relate that back to Ashley Young, certainly at some points in the game at the weekend, Ashley Young was up against Alexander-Arnold, who is naive but is very, very athletic, Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's been in good form, and Salah. And he still was the standout player, Young. You'd have to say Young was the standout player in that game on that flank. So I know that the players all move around and all the rest of it, but at one point that was definitely the case. And you've got to give him credit for that.
What did you think of that one matter miss? Did you think he was unlucky? Or did you think chest it, take it down? I mean, 3-0, that would have been quite something.
I think in that much space, he has to make the right decision for the good of the team and be ruthless.
He didn't know he had that much space, I think. I think he assumed rather naively that someone was going to come through the back of him, but nobody was even near him.
It's just nice that he's still playing for Mourinho. Mourinho hasn't got rid of him yet. But when I saw that miss, I thought,
I'd have gone through the back of him, Pete. About 10 seconds after the ball had gone.
As little as 10 now.
Yeah. Give myself too much credit. The older I get, the better I was.
Yeah, that's true. Did Liverpool lack a bit of depth, chaps? According to Opta again, Liverpool have won only one of their 7 Premier League games on the weekends immediately following playing in the Champions League this season. And, you know, again, Klopp likes to rotate his side, but I just wondered, you know, looking at the centre-back situation and so on, do they, I know it's lack depth, but if you look at Manchester United, you know, Liverpool have only got the one injury, really, which is Nathaniel Clyne, and he's been out for a while. Whereas if you think about Manchester United, they were without Pogba, Martial, Herrera, Jones, Rojo and Blint. Now, you might say, well, Rojo and Blint, but they start games.
They've spent a lot of money over the last 5 years, haven't they? They've bought a lot of players in.
So but that's not the question. The question is, do Liverpool lack a bit of depth?
Liverpool have used 25 players this season, and 3 of them have been Danny Ings, Marco Grujic, and Divock Origi. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think it's more of a case that he changes stuff around a lot, and that for a large part of the season, they maybe conceded some stupid goals that they shouldn't have done. That would be more my assessment of it.
And also, I mean, it is a tough league, isn't it? It is a very, very difficult thing to just keep those wins rolling. There's very few teams that can show the sort of consistency that we're talking about there. I mean, obviously City have set the pace.
And no doubt next week Man United will be back to being rather underwhelming, probably, you know, shave a 1-0 win somewhere.
And Liverpool have only lost 2 Premier League games since the end of October, to be fair.
All right.
Yeah.
But Manchester United are still 5 points above them in the league.
And I love how Klopp, his face almost gets contorted. Yeah. He gets so upset. Like if you think of there was a situation which wasn't a penalty, but I think he thought was a penalty. And he's very sort of heart on the sleeve, emotionally led, as we know. But I've never seen someone's face. It's the most contorted face since Bowyer had that fight with Dyer.
It's like it's collapsing in on itself.
Yeah. It's like his whole bottom half of his jaw looks like it's going to come off his face.
Well, he always, I think his teeth aren't his own teeth, it feels like.
He's what about very, Firmino's? Firmino's teeth is own teeth.
Oh, goodness, they're beauties, aren't they?
They're almost blue.
They're lovely. Yeah. Lovely teeth.
Did you see what Mourinho said after the game? It's not that important. Brighton and Sevilla are more important.
Yeah. Like said,
he's seen Klopp's face and he's like, I know what to do
but
here.
But isn't it great we just don't talk about Jose's what he has to say when they actually win a football match? Yeah. Like, it's something to think about, Jose. You wouldn't have to work that fucking hard.
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But it was a good win for Manchester United. A much better performance. Yep. And they're still very much in second. We're going to talk about those Newcastle boys after this.
Yay.
Then you can bring your fucking dinner. Because by the time I'm finished with you, you'll fucking need it.
Something else we need is the emails with Pete Donaldson.
It is time for emails with Pete Donaldson, and you can bring your flipping dinner. So, hello to... I've left the name off this. Sorry, this person who did this.
I know who they are.
I know who they are. A tale of petty revenge. Probably best that I leave the name off this one, to be honest. I used to work in a call centre for a major bank when this millennium was still in its infancy. One day, the usual boring routine was broken when I asked the caller's name. I was delighted to learn it was Sunderland assistant boss Steve Cottrell. I put Steve through security and asked him for 3 digits from his passcode. Then my silly Geordie fingers slipped and entered them all correctly. Oh, sorry, incorrectly. This happened a further 2 times. Come on now. So he had to go through the forgotten passcode routine. Unfortunately, Steve also failed to get these right, despite his insistence they were totally correct. Needless to say, Steve was rather upset, asked to check in with my supervisor, so I popped him on hold for 5 minutes, stared into space, got Steve back on the phone to explain that the supervisor agreed with me. He'd have to go to his branch to unlock the account. Steve was pissed.
Pissed off.
Wow.
An egregious display of the lack of respect for the Data Protection Act there.
Quite. Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. Hello to
Tom. It is Steve Cottrell, so who cares?
Hello to Tom. Just on the idea of footballers eating at matches, I was at a Gillingham reserve match many years ago. The first half passed without incident. At the start of the second half, the away side came out and there was some commotion as they took to the field with 10 men. A few minutes passed before a chap entered the field of play. He came running on holding a cheeseburger. He was halfway through munching. The ref caught sight of it. I mean, this is a Gillingham reserve match. Yeah. It's still a decent level. The ref caught sight of this and immediately ushered him off, taking offence at the player. In one huge bite, consumed the remaining burger, tossing the wrapper to the ground. The ref, now clearly annoyed, brandished a yellow and ordered him to remove the wrapper from the pitch, doing as he told as he balled it up and threw it to the sideline. From the stand, we heard a shout, "See, I told it wasn't okay," to which the player replied, "Fuck off, Mum," leading to the linesman flagging and the player seeing a red.
That is unbelievable.
The poor guy didn't even get to enjoy his burger.
That was almost literally unbelievable. imagine like the owner of the club totting up the expenses and the fines and everything at the end of the month. One of your players here has got a yellow card for littering.
Exactly.
On a football pitch. And listen, you can't have a pop at Gillingham stand because they easily beat Portsmouth at Fratton Park at the weekend. For the first time, Marcus, since 1912.
Magic.
Wow.
Over 100 years. Breaking records, Pompey.
What does Opta say about that, Marcus?
Yeah.
The Opta stat on that is that Gillingham were better.
Okay, right. Gav says, "Hey, Ramblers, sorry to be a bit serious on your collective ass, but in response to your discussion about West Ham on last week's preview show, well, you got a little bit more this week. Of course, you're right that relegation would be a disaster for them, but from a financial perspective, it's worth remembering that if they are relegated, they get a 50% reduction in the rent."
Yeah, I heard that if they go all the way down to Conference South, the council have to start paying them.
Yeah.
And that's their plan.
Damn right.
So it's not as disastrous as it might be if they weren't being subsidised by the taxpayers.
It still is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. By all means, feel sorry for the West Ham fans.
Is that from David Sullivan?
You said, look, the art of the deal. I caught a good deal. That's all I'm saying. So, yeah, thank you for that, Gav.
So, oh, sorry, that was me whacking my water bottle against the mic sheath.
And that is not a euphemism.
No, it isn't.
If you want to get to the show, as always, show at thefootballramble.com. No, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that right? Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah. We'd like to make it tough for the listeners to actually get in touch with us.
Yeah.
Remember, you're in charge of them, Peter.
Yeah.
Now, we said Rafa the Gaffer needed to go for it, and they did. A number of results went Newcastle's way as well. They're now 5 points above the rally zone. Pete Donaldson.
They needed that win, didn't they? They bloody needed that win, and they got it.
Damn right, eh?
Over about as underwhelming as I've seen from a Premier League side.
Southampton
were so disinterested, so rubbish.
Yeah.
They were really piss poor.
Terrible.
Yeah, indeed. They really did look bad. But Newcastle, they were there for the taking, and you got to take them.
There was a few great goals in that match.
Kennedy's
first one. No one's like... I'm not saying it was even close to Bergkamp's goal, but the spin and the finish.
It was lovely.
Wowzers.
Yeah, it was a great goal. And actually, Kennedy has given them a real sort of penetrative outlet. And you can really see the difference it's making to their play. And as you said about how bad Southampton were, their problem is they let the other team set the agenda, home or away, whoever they're playing, and they're just getting rolled over.
They've seen like the football team's kind of inviting pressure on themselves and not worrying about it. I mean, you've got to stop at some point and attack.
Pellegrino's got like a really interesting way of management, which is that, as Jim rightly says, letting the other team set the agenda and then not being able to change it.
Yeah.
You can't do either of those. So if you can't change it in a game because you're not capable enough, at least get your team on the front foot and try and do something, especially at this stage of the season where really they need wins. I understand it's a long trip and it's away from home. And it can be a difficult atmosphere as an away team to play at St James's Park. But I'm sorry, but we're in the middle of March now. You got a win game.
At 3-0, the Newcastle supporters just going, I don't know what to do now. I don't think we can really throw this away because Southampton just seemed completely disinterested.
Southampton's plan seems to be to lull teams into a justifiable sense of security.
Yeah. And then do nothing about it.
Yeah.
Well, Mauricio Pellegrino said after the game when he was asked if he was the man to save them, he replied quite smugly, I might add, "I am the Southampton manager right now."
Yeah.
And it was just the body language and the kind of... I mean, look, he may well be just putting on a front. I'm sure he is. But some of the fans were calling him to go. And after the game, there was a few sort of chances.
Marcus, I think there's a decent argument to suggest that...
I think they've waited too long.
They should fire him because he's definitely going to go in the summer. There's no question about that.
I think they've waited too long, Luke.
Yeah.
But I think that's the problem, that if you're going to pull the trigger, do it a month ago.
Yeah, but fine, but... time running in a sort of quite linear fashion as we understand it. There's nothing you can do about that now. But what you can do is you can say, if we fire a manager now and we've got someone who's a bit of a firefighter, you've got however many games it is, eight or so, to get something. And if they get, I mean, how many points are there at the moment? They probably need, I'd say it's difficult to say these days, but they probably need 10 more points. Okay, and they've got 8 games in which to do it. They're on 28 at the moment.
Mm.
You've got a far better chance
if
there's someone available to fire.
Is there someone available?
Well, this is it. If they can find that person, it makes way more sense, doesn't it? I mean, there's every chance that it'll be Southampton, Stoke and West Brom going down this season. That would be the most brutally Darwinian sort of Premier League relegation season I think you've ever seen.
I also feel that this is a great example of the level Jonjo Shelvey is at. I mean, if you give him time and space... in this division, he will kill you.
Yeah.
Absolutely kill you.
Yeah.
The problem he finds is when he hasn't got time and space, he gets very frustrated with himself, loses focus, and then bad things can happen at worst, and at best, he's just anonymous. But in that type of game, I mean, Lamina, who I think got dragged off, had an absolute shocker, gave him the run of the park, and Shelvey can pass. If you give him any time you want, Shelvey he will pass wherever he can.
He's the best passing midfielder England have.
You reckon?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd have that, but he's not an England player for me because he doesn't work hard enough.
Yeah, but the conversation just won't go away, will it?
You won't let it go away. Marcus, the way we're going, you're going to have about 500 people in this squad.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Get him on that fleet.
Yeah.
then nobody's allowed to take any luggage because there's so much.
When are England turning up? They'll be here in a bit. They're coming on a liner because they haven't got enough. There's no plane big enough.
That'd be a good thing, Pete, because often there is baggage brought into the tournament.
Yeah, there is.
So Jonjo Shelvey's the answer.
I mean, I'll credit him. He was fairly injured. We wanted a player, so he had his painkilling injection, knowing full well he's got 21 days to recover before the next match. So
it's a big win for them.
Yeah. Massive. Oh, huge.
What do you think, Peter, about Kennedy being the first Newcastle player to score a brace at St James's Park in the league since Wijnaldum in May 2016?
St James's Park hasn't been a happy hunting ground for Newcastle for a little while just because of the toxic atmosphere that that Mike Ashley has given.
Not having a forward who can score goals.
No, good point, yeah.
Doesn't help.
If only there was someone scoring goals right now who's on the books at Newcastle United.
I will spit at you,
hang on,
Marcus.
We've had enough of that already this week.
I will throw phlegm in your direction, sunshine.
Well, you might lose your job at the Football Ramble. but let's, before we talk
not
about...
Not the worst thing I've done today.
No. Yeah, no doubt. But we'll read about that in the tabloids later. And we'll come to the Championship in a brief moment. But Arsenal have bounced back. It's all fine again.
Wenger.
Numerous monkeys off the back and thrown into the sea.
It's a serious question to be asked of the Arsenal fan in the room.
Yes.
Which is, they enjoyed their win. They were excellent against Milan. And I don't care who you are. I come from the generation of football fans which says, if you win in the San Siro, it's a great win.
And Milan have been playing well.
They've been resurgent.
Shocking week for Luther Blissett.
But the question remains, Jim, and you need to answer it because you speak on behalf of all Arsenal fans in this room.
Pete's a closet Arsenal fan.
Apparently.
So are you.
Would, in the grand scheme of things, beyond the fact that you're just happy to win a game, is it the best thing that can happen to Arsenal for Wenger to essentially paper over the cracks for the rest of the season?
Sorry, how do you mean?
What I mean is they could have a really strong finish to the season, just miss out on the Champions League, get to the final of the Europa League, or heaven forbid, actually win it, and that means that Wenger is guaranteed, cast iron guaranteed, to stay for another year and possibly longer. Or they can completely capitulate now, and I know it's against the modus operandi of a football fan to want this to happen. If they completely capitulated, if we were sat here today, they'd lost to Milan and they'd lost at home to Watford. Long term, there's an argument to say that would have been better for Arsenal.
I disagree. I think your team winning is always welcome.
Let me address
the point. Arsenal winning the Europa League is absolutely the best case scenario possible, whether Wenger's in charge or not, because he won't be there forever. The most important, and it's easy to lose sight of that. That's the thing. People feel like he will be there forever when realistically, obviously he won't. If Arsenal can get back into the Champions League after this season, the way it's gone, that is a huge achievement, and that gives them a chance to try and stay in there next season, regardless of who's in charge. I think it could be time for Wenger this season. It could be time at the end of his contract. We just never know. It's almost pointless to speculate on it because we've been doing it for so long. But absolutely not. No, it's always better for the team to do well and have a proper charge at the Europa League to try and get back into the Champions League, because it just gives them a chance that otherwise then I just don't see how they're going to get.
For signing players.
Well, quite, absolutely. Signing players, just sorting the atmosphere in the club as well. Just, no, it's not better for Arsenal to fail.
Okay. Well, I'm sure some Arsenal fans may disagree with that.
I think there's plenty, and I respect Jim's opinion, of course, but there are plenty of Arsenal fans, some of which I know personally, who would prefer for Arsenal to accelerate the Wenger leaving the club as soon as possible.
Well, and on that note, you know, when Mesut Ozil, who played very well and reached his 50th assist in the Premier League, now the quickest player to reach that mark, taking the record away from Eric Cantona.
It's great that Cantona had it.
Yeah.
I love that. I wasn't expecting that.
No, me neither.
He doesn't have it anymore. And then Petr Cech reaches 200th Premier League clean sheets. Yeah. First player to achieve this, and he made his first penalty save for Arsenal against Troy Deeney as well, the sort of pantomime villain and so on.
So much narrative.
Yeah. But all this, some Arsenal fans will be annoyed because looking at the records and what Luke was saying, some will think the problems still persist. But there we are. I understand what you're saying, Jim, about the Europa League because, yes, I think Arsenal do need to get back into the Champions League. And if there's a way of doing that for signing players, for making the club more attractive, and also if the ball did in the summer think, OK, we're back in the Champions League, but we want to move on from Wenger, you can attract a better manager.
Well, absolutely. I don't think there is a single Arsenal fan who, even if Arsenal did win the Europa League, would think, all right, everything's rosy again, you know, problems are gone. Like the problems
no, but
are
it's
so
about, it's about Wenger justifying it to himself, not to the fans.
Absolutely. True. But, yeah.
Let's talk about the Championship now, ladies and gentlemen. I've been very patient. Before we get on to everyone's favourite Serbian striker, Aston Villa with a great win against Wolves. My goodness, great win for Brucey. Villa could be back in the Prem next season, and my goodness, they are winning a lot of games at the moment.
It's I'm finding it very easy to sympathise and to support Steve Bruce generally because of the difficult season he's had personally. Sure. He's had a very, very tough time.
But I think we like Brucey.
And he seems like absolutely
future England manager.
maybe I'll stop a bit short of that.
Okay.
But a massive win, and is it two in the last three that Wolves have lost now?
Yeah,
are they
bottling
it? Well, it's very unlike them given this season. I fell into the trap of thinking that was done. There's only one automatic promotion spot left because Wolves are doing so well.
Yeah, agreed, yeah. Well, Cardiff are just 3 points behind them. Warnock's Warriors have won six in a row, so they are finding form.
And they still have to play each other too.
Yeah, so Wolves have got to be careful because Villa, Fulham and Cardiff are all in very hot streaks of form at the moment, whereas Wolves... Now, OK, their two losses were away to Fulham and away to Aston Villa, two very difficult places at the moment. But concentrating on Villa, Robert Snodgrass, who, by the way, what a move. Normally you think a step down a division would be a bad move. But going from West Ham to Aston Villa, my goodness, he must be loving that. But he said the players would run through a brick wall for Steve Bruce at the moment. He said the mood in the camp is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Should England bring back John Terry?
Sneaking that in.
I saw John Terry. Stick him on. Might as well. Yeah. Marcus has got every other Englishman in the world on the plane. So I saw a picture of John Terry back... overseeing, I don't know why, but overseeing some Chelsea training the other day.
Oh yeah, he was back. Of course he was. Yeah,
dog with him. on the Villa thing. I mean, it would be good to see him back in the Premier League, right? They're a big club, where they should be.
Of course.
It's a massive win for them.
A sellout crowd at Villa Park. They hammered Wolves, who are top of the league. You know, any football traditionalist or purist among us would think to yourself, yeah, there's something in that.
Can I also just expand slightly on the Snodgrass point, which is that it's absolutely the right move for him.
Oh, yeah.
Because people who know him better than me, I mean, I don't know him at all, say that perhaps lacks some of the dedication at the very top level in the Premier League to succeed consistently.
Yeah.
In the Championship, when it's not quite as demanding for a man of his ability, it suits him down to the ground. I mean, if he makes that deal permanent, because I believe he's still on loan, isn't he?
Yeah, he's.
If Villa go up to the Premier League next year, I don't expect him to have a huge impact on the Premier League. A lot of ifs there. But at the moment, he's doing very well.
We had an email from Krish. I'll just stick it in here, if you don't mind. After Pete Taylor being approached by Villa fans when at a Newcastle game at Villa Park, I had a similar experience this weekend at the Villa Wolves match. I was with a Villa fan, a Wolves fan, and I was a neutral. We were sat in the family stand. Effectively, you're allowed neutrals in the family stand a little bit, are you, when there's a mix of people? When Villa went 3-1 up, the Wolves fan and I were approached with the opening line from a 70-stone blob. Yeah, Wolves, you're not celebrating the goals enough? We got called dingles, not really sure what the insult is, C-words, and threatened by the friendly chap and his eight pals. We assured him that we were neutrals, and his question to verify this was, show me your ticket. Obviously a Villa ticket. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
What's the score? Assuming he was hoping we were going to say, oh, for fuck's sake, we're 3-1 down. It's easy to see why JT chose Villa. Stay out of trouble, Chris.
Bring out the jelly. Is that
Bring
Villa?
Out the jelly.
Remember Bring Out the Jelly?
Yes.
Might have been at Villa, possibly.
That's classic.
I can't remember that
That's
one.
Classic ramble trope fair. Mm.
Bring out the jelly, guys.
Get on to Mitro then, Marcus,
let's talk about Mitrovic.
We need to spare about 15 minutes for Mitrovic's potential top scorer at the World Cup in a group with Brazil chat.
And find a way for you to get him on the England plane.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Jim, he would be front and central for me.
I saw Jim around the back of a Marcus around the back of a dodgy alleyway over the weekend trying to get a fake passport for Mitro.
I was actually there, but it was for different reasons.
It looks just like him. He was screaming. It just
trying to persuade Tom Kearney to go back to England, but no, he's Scotland. To Kearney described Mitrovic as an animal. Fulham 5 points off Cardiff in second, 8 points off Wolves, eh?
Mitrovic is like a man who turns up at five aside with blood on his shirt, and he never tells you why he's got blood on his shirt already. It's just weird.
I've genuinely seen you do that, Pete.
He's having a lovely time. Should we give a little mensch for Millwall, who are now unbeaten in 11? 6 points off the playoffs.
Doing very well.
Sneaking there. Of course, Tim Cahill among their ranks now.
Yep. Back in the Australia squad, I think, isn't he?
Of course he is.
He's always there.
38 years old, I think, Tim Cahill is.
He's scored 7 goals in 5 games, though, Marcus. Because Mitro has. No.
Yeah, Mitro is about
Mitro is on fire.
Yeah.
Mitro's a tinderbox.
Yeah, good old Tim Cahill. So there we are. Right, we're going to talk about the Scottish Premiership after this, ladies and gentlemen.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Ah, the memories.
I mentioned that earlier. I didn't even know that was going to come up.
Well, don't forget that the preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Thursday, everybody. The Rodden family let themselves down yet again.
They're having a terrible week, a terrible month, in fact. Three of them now have dished out losing bets. Insult to injury, whoever was on the Twitter for the ramble this weekend, I think it might have been Jim, spelt their name Radden. So now everyone in the who follows them and who was caning them was using their wrong name.
The Raddens.
They've had a terrible time.
John Radden.
I look forward to the granddad getting in touch for Thursday. Yeah.
Well, we need a new better though, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We need a new one. So yeah, get in touch, show@thefootballramble.com, and I'll pick out someone. I mean, I might go Rodden family again. I don't know.
This family tree is like, it's just, we are extended branches off that particular situation. Yeah,
think of it like a tube of toothpaste. I'm squeezing the last bit out.
I mean, despite spelling their name wrong, I'm really rooting for them. I want someone to turn this around for them.
I think you've got to
change for them.
Yeah. Luke, you've got to be careful because you don't go into that managerial thing of, no, I'm going to be the one that will turn them into great betters. Yeah.
I'm already well into that. Yeah. It's too late.
I don't know. There we are. The Scottish Premiership, they had a couple of the big derbies going on. Celtic won a very entertaining Old Firm derby 3-2. Even went down to 10 men when it was 2-2 and they got the winner. Yeah. What a beauty it was from Eduard. Lovely Finn. And actually, then Alfredo Morelos, missed a sitter for Rangers 2 minutes from time.
All the Celtic goals are great. Tom Rogic.
Yeah, it's a lovely one.
Beauty.
Yeah, really good. Celtic now 9 points clear at the top with the game in hand, but Brendy Rodgers believes it's not over yet.
Well, did Rodgers get... I only ever look for sort of Brendan Rodgers quotes on sort of Scottish results.
Did he do a Brent one this weekend?
Did he? I don't know.
Did he do Childer, didn't he use the word Childer Entertainer? Like, almost clearly he knows what his reputation is.
Really?
I don't know. I think somebody quoted that as, might be wrong.
Oh dear.
I saw fairly recently there was a David Brent or Brendan Rodgers quote quiz thing.
Right, yeah.
You could choose. But that was a while ago.
That's been knocking around a little while though. Yeah, but it was a.
I do it every month.
Indeed, it was a great win for Celtic though, especially going down to Ted Men and Rangers. They think they're trying to get back. You know, they're second in the league. A win would have taken them obviously 3 points closer. And just to lose them, Celtic still are that bit better.
The best, I mean, without question, the best Brendan Rodgers quote of the season though was when, cause did they get PSG in their Champions League group this year?
Yes, they did. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I think they got battered, didn't they? And Rodgers came out
7. Hang on. Was it 7-1? And then he said it wasn't as bad as the 7-0 or something.
No, and he also said that, you can't buy history to PSG as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's superb, isn't it? Elsewhere, sadly, Hibs beat Hearts in Edinburgh Derby.
Well, let's talk about that, Marcus.
Right, Pete wants to do Going for Glory.
All right, Pete.
Yeah, let's get a Going for Glory, guys.
Yeah.
Do you want a little update on who's been winning what on Going for Glory, by the way?
Because, that'd be great.
We have
because
one.
Simon from Canada basically says, it's spring is finally upon us. I thought I'd update you boys on the current tally of Going for Glory. So thank you so
Fantastic.
Much for doing this, Simon. A fine service.
I'd have been trying harder on then. This is going to happen.
Pete, did you double check the accuracy of it?
Hopefully this little update was sent in early enough to light fires under certain posteriors in the race. For top spot. Tally, Jim is in the lead with 11.
Jim, that's actually a surprise. I thought that
must be winning. No, Jim's very good.
And Jim only missed one show, to be fair. Marcus, 9 players, correct. You missed 3 shows. And Luke, 7 players. You missed 3 shows as well.
I'm having a mess.
No,
tell you what.
That's quite tight, though, if you take in the missed shows.
Jim is on a hat trick as well.
Also, we've had such a sort of the organisation of the game has been in disarray this season. Now, it's mostly your fault, Donaldson, but
what?
I think we're going to have to bring in VAR for next season.
Yeah. Do you want to drill down even more at the stats, Opta style? Some interesting trivia, though. Luke has had the fewest numbers of correct guesses. The players he has under his wing have a combined total of 10 Premier League winners' medals.
There we go.
Whereas Marcus and quality Jim only have 4
quality.
Each. So, yeah.
Pete.
You can identify a decent footballer.
Quality goes to quality.
Bugger off.
Bugger off.
Right, shall we have we have the jingy?
All right, mate. Just get the old clues out, mate. When they're
Lord. Match day.
All-time jingle, that. Yes. All-time classic.
Thank
jingle.
You very much to Ben Cattell for getting involved here. My name in Spanish would be Robert Pizarro.
What?
Robert Pizarro.
Okay.
Stop.
Robert Pires.
Incorrect.
If that was Robert Pires, I would have walked out. Because that would be the worst start to a clue to a thing ever.
Stop. Robert Prozinecki, because Luke will be gutted if that's right.
Incorrect.
Oh.
I was born in Ormskirk, a town famous for its gingerbread and the residence of Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah, I know Ormskirk well.
Because of the gingerbread.
I've been to Ormskirk this season.
So his name in Spanish was...
Robert... Pizarro.
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 Was it not Roberto?
I just said Roberto.
Sorry. Forgive me. Carry on.
Stop stalling for time. He always does this.
Yeah. Well, what a little staller.
Yeah.
I won 44 international caps, scoring 1 goal.
Stop. Robert Fleck.
Incorrect.
Oh, that would have been brilliant.
Yeah, wow. Roberto Fleck.
Yeah.
It'd be Flecko, probably.
First time ever I saw your goal.
He must have had more than 1 at the international level.
My first professional team on the continent was Anderlecht after failing to agree terms with Nottingham Forest.
But he's born in Ormskirk. Yeah.
Funny where one. The gingerbread and the Duncan Fergusons are.
Okay.
After finding little game time at Anderlecht, I spent 4 years at Lens helping them achieve promotion to Ligue 1. However, my most memorable moment was after winning a game against Paris Saint-Germain while walking through Paris with my wife. 2 fans recognised me and hit me in the head with a baseball bat.
Oh my God. Pete, what year was he born?
He was born...
Did you say 71?
I'm not giving it a clue.
You can't request
not
clues.
Giving it
No. Normally he says at the start, I just know I'd forgotten.
That. No.
Yeah. Sorry, Pete, what's his name?
We pretty much gave it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Just Roberto Pizarro.
Yeah.
Kevin Keegan.
I released my autobiography in 1999 called The Hard Way.
Stop.
I think he's got it.
Oh, no.
Come on, do it.
I was going to say it's Robbie Fowler, but it's not right for the international caps. Robbie Fowler wasn't Anderlecht. I was just basically trying to think of people from that part of England called Robbie.
He wasn't a particularly hard player, though, was he?
No.
While playing for Southampton in the FA Cup against Reading, I was sent off by Graham Paul for showing the finger to the linesman.
Ooh. Don't know.
I played 18 games for the Premier League winning side of
94-95. Oh. See, Robert thinks from...
Robbie Slater?
It's Robbie Slater!
Oh, that's excellent. That's why he gets them.
That's very good.
I would have never got that. Jim's genuinely impressive at this game.
My most memorable international game was against Argentina, which featured the one and only Diego, and the Argentine press, knowing nothing of me prior to the game, labelled me the red one. The red one.
Jim, that's a hat-trick.
So you're better than the Rad and Roddens.
So Robbie Slater played for Australia but was born...
In England, apparently.
In England,
yeah,
apparently so.
Yeah, he was.
See, that's what's thrown us there, isn't it?
I thought he might have been Scottish for some reason.
Yeah,
sure, your working's out.
There we are. Well done, Jim.
I'll tell you what. Also, a very good set of clues. That's the sort of standard we're after.
Now we want them easier. Although, to be fair, he pretty much did give us
one of the clues. One week will be I was included as part of the 540-man preliminary squad by Marcus Miller for the World Cup.
You know, Pele did that 125 greatest living players. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have the 125 England squad for the World Cup.
No, you have 125 potential England left backs for the World Cup.
I'm looking forward to it. We'll probably chat a bit more about the England squad on the Thursday preview show, perhaps. Mm. So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening.
That's not going
to
make you switch off. Nothing will.
I said we may.
Yeah.
Mm. Tune in to find out if we do.
We'll see, yeah.
But thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, of course. It's been an absolute pleasure. Say goodbye, Luke Moore.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jim Campbell.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete Donaldson.
See you later, Marcus.
Goodbye from me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.